Beyond the Bricks, welcome to it. RJ Crace, the host of Sports Saturday, the co-host of Sports Saturday, I should say. Don't want to shortchange Jersey Johnny. 2-4 is our time now. Jersey Johnny in Washington, D.C. this Saturday for a very special event where they're taking a group of World War II veterans to see the World War II Memorial. We'll have him on Saturday to talk about that, but JMV from The Ride with JMV on 1070 The Fan joining me. Anyway, enough of the shameless plugs. The History of the 500, Sunday night, 7 o'clock on 93 WIVC, right here at WIVC.com. And, of course, the TuneIn and iHeartRadio apps on your smartphone. If you don't have one of those, do yourself a favor and get one or both of those. Any of those ways are appropriate for listening to The History of the 500 this week. We start a bit of a new phase. Over the first couple of years of this project, dating back to the centennial celebration, which is what we originally christened it as 2 years ago, as well as last year, it was a 10-part series. This year, we've expanded it to 15. This marks episode number 11, and for the next 5 weeks, instead of talking basically about the stories of the last 100 years, we're going to focus on individuals, drivers that have made themselves legends. This weekend, we start with four guys from the 1950s, Troy Ruttman, Bill Vukovich, Jimmy Bryan, and Bob Swikert. But here on Beyond the Bricks for this week, we'll talk about a couple of other guys that we won't have a chance to get to this weekend. And to help me do that is our racing insider, Mike Thompson. Mike, let's talk about a couple guys. Sam Hanks is an interesting guy because I said this a couple of several weeks ago when we had Greg Littleton in studio, who is an author and a frequent collectible show visitor, as you are. And I said something that he agreed with, and that was that of all the guys of that era, you know, we talk about now, things are so corporate now. You got to behave in a certain way to please the sponsors, to endear yourself to fans, etc. And Sam Hanks is one of the guys from back in that era that would have made the transition very nicely if he were put in today's climate.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Sam Hanks, you know, he had kind of an all-American look. You know, he obviously extremely talented, but he was very smart from a corporate side as well. You know, he became director of racing after he retired from racing. He became director of racing out at the Speedway. And so he would have been perfect for that. You know, he was interesting about Sam is, you know, he had so many chances before he finally won the big one. And you know, when he won the big one, he was so emotional about it, you know, and he was you know, he, to the day, even just before he passed away, I talked to him just before he passed away, and he was still signing autographs with he would write joy at the finish because he had a picture that he really liked to send out to fans who asked for autographs of him coming down pit lane on his way to victory lane. And you know, I mean, it was a very emotional picture for him. And so he would title that picture for you when you asked for an autograph, joy at the finish, you know, so it really meant something to him. So no, I agree. I think Sam would have been, you know, you could take Sam Hanks, absolutely. And in fact, I think when we do the people listen to the show this week, Donald Davidson mentions a couple of different guys who, if they were around today, Jimmy Bryan being one, Bob Swikert being one, they would be massive stars today. Because Bryan, if you look at a picture of Jimmy Bryan, he would be a huge star today because he had the look, he had the kind of the swagger. You know, I mean, he was part John Wayne, he was part Rex Mays. I mean, he was literally a guy who, he could have starred in a cowboy movie, but he was also such a supremely talented race car driver. But this guy, I mean, if you dropped him in today, he'd be a marketing dream. I mean, he was just, you know, you don't ever see very, very rarely do you see a picture of Jimmy Bryan without a cigar between his teeth. It's just very, he was such an interesting guy and so charismatic. I mean, he would be just a marketer's dream. And, you know, Donald also makes the point about Bob Swikert. If you've never seen a picture of Bob Swikert and his wife, Dory, Donald makes the idea, you know, makes the point that they were Ken and Barbie. And that's really, you know, as A.J. Foyt would say, this is quite true. Because, you know, Dory, in these pictures, she was really the glamorous woman of the time. I mean, you know, there's a lot of times, you know, sometimes you'll see people say, you know, they'll make their list of their favorite drivers' wives to look at over the years, you know, and that list will come up every once in a while. Dory Swikert, in these pictures, I'm telling you, she was a absolutely beautiful woman. And so, you know, Donald describes them as Ken and Barbie and the glamour couple, the power couple. You know, I mean, they really would be, if you dropped them into 2013, you know, a marketing dream. I mean, there's billboards around town. I don't know if people have seen them that have just started to go up of Alex Tagliani and his wife Bronte. And, you know, they're a very striking couple. You know, if you haven't seen Alex and Bronte, they're kind of the striking couple. You know, if you drop Bob Swikert and Dory into 2013, you know, the way they looked in 1955, it would be the same kind of thing.
Mike, I think you're the only one in this building that I could mention one driver, and then you pivot to a second driver and then to a third driver in the same answer to the question.
Well,
it is a unique talent that you have.
Well, you know, and it's interesting, too, is the guy you actually asked the question about, Sam Hanks, Alice Hanks, who's still alive, she was an extremely beautiful woman as well, and she is a really vivacious lady. I only talked to her one time, very briefly, but she was a very, very interesting lady to talk to. But, you know, Sam Hanks, just one of those guys that, you know, he was really ahead of his time. I mean, it, you know, just really a forerunner of what racing became, because he was so, I don't want to say, you know, because some guys today are, you know, they want to get all their sponsor mentions in, and it's very, I don't know what the word I'm looking for here is, you know, it's very kind of antiseptic, you know, very, you know, they don't want to say anything for fear of, you know, getting themselves in trouble.
It's certainly almost as if, in a lot of cases, they have, you could say, boy, it's a nice day outside, and they would give you the same answer as if you said, you know, how was your drive today?
Yeah, no, and I agree with that. But I think there are certain guys that you're going to get those kind of answers from. What's interesting about a guy like Sam Hanks, some of those guys, they did look forward, you know what I mean, a little bit. And they did look forward to the, you know, the corporate aspect of things. And, you know, Sam Hanks, like I say, he became quite an ambassador for the sport after his retirement, and he, you know, he saw that aspect of it coming in. I mean, not to say that he was a, you know, an antiseptic guy giving antiseptic answers. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying about Sam Hanks is he saw the, you know, the importance of being, you know, multifaceted. He saw that you had to be more than just a race car driver. You had to be able to have a bit of a spokesman in you, you know, and that's obviously become so critical to drivers here in 2013.
Very much like Rutherford, no?
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, Johnny was such a good corporate spokesman. I mean, man, Johnny, I still, as a kid, you remember those Pennzoil Chaparral ads he used to do on the radio and television? I mean, Johnny Rutherford, you couldn't ask for, honestly, a better corporate spokesman than Johnny Rutherford, because, you know, I mean, good, clean-cut, family man, trustworthy guy pitching your product. And obviously all of that stuff's great, but you got to have somebody who also can deliver on the track. And obviously Johnny Rutherford could do that because of all his talent, you know, winning the 500 three times, national champion, and all the things that he accomplished. So yeah, I mean, another good example of that, a guy who, you know, absolutely was a, you know, outstanding corporate pitchman.
Sam Hanks, certainly a lot of people were rooting for him in the twilight of his career to win a 500. He started racing in the 40s at the Speedway, and then finally what turned out to be his last hurrah in 1957, he goes to victory lane, and you can tell in Sid Collins' voice how excited he was for Sam Hanks. Here's the final call of the 1957 race, followed by author Bob Gates with some thoughts on Sam Hanks.
Well, it's certainly a great thrill to see Sammy Hanks take the checkered flag, and there he is, the winner of the 500. What a great champion he's going to be. And here he comes around the southwest turn again for his extra lap. Sam Hanks winning the race by approximately 20 seconds.
Another guy that made his name in midget racing, came to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway again post-World War II. Very, very good driver. Won national championship and eventually won the Indianapolis 500 in 1957. Sam Hanks was always very articulate, very well-dressed, always represented the sport very, very well, as Johnny Rutherford and some others did in the generations to come. But Sam had that reputation even on the West Coast, racing on the West Coast. And when he won the Indianapolis 500 in 1957, he retired in victory lane and then became the competition director for the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And I'm sure part of that was not only the respect that they had for him, but the way he presented himself to the public as well. Sam Hanks had finished second place multiple times, and he was into his 40s. So he knew he didn't have too many more years that he could race and be competitive. In fact, that was fairly old for that era. A lot of times guys would win and then retire in their late 20s or very early 30s and get out before something did happen to them. So he, I'm sure, was considering retirement, but of course wanted to win that Indianapolis 500. And when he did it, he knew then that he needed to retire and retired on the spot. Cried, had a lot of tears, not only for the happiness in winning the Indianapolis 500, but also announcing his retirement from racing.
And again, a real feel-good, one of those feel-good stories. You know, you have races that are known for their great finishers. You have races that are known for a lot of lead changes, for different things, for how hot they were like last year. And then you have some that are known for a driver winning that is a fan favorite. Certainly Sam Hanks comes to mind. We'll talk to about somebody else here in a couple minutes that also comes to mind. I think you look at some other guys that come to mind. Bobby Rahal, for entirely different reasons, in 1986. Perhaps somebody like Eddie Cheever was a fan favorite when he won in 98. But that's, I think, the thing that strikes me about Sam Hanks winning.
You know, one of the things I like about Sam Hanks also is the year before, you'll recall, he finished second to Pat Flaherty. And then if you remember, there's that famous interview in Victory Lane where Flaherty gets asked, well, were you worried about Sam Hanks? And then he kind of hesitates and, you know, hedges a little bit. And he's like, well, I wasn't really worried, but you can tell he was a little worried, but he, you know, he doesn't want to say, well, I was worried, but he's like, well, you know, anytime you're dueling with Sam Hanks, you're going to be a little bit worried because Sam Hanks was obviously one of the top guys of his era. But yeah, your point is absolutely correct. I mean, you know, a lot of people wanted to see Sam Hanks win the big one because he was such a good guy, well-respected, and he had been around. I mean, he had been around for so long. I mean, the fact is, I mean, he made his debut at the Speedway in 1940. So he had been there before the war. You know, he's making his debut at the time. You know, he's racing against the Wilbur Shaws and the, you know, Rex Mazes and the Ted Horns of the world. And he's, you know, still there in 1957. I mean, he's still there, you know, post Bill Vukovich, post Bob Swikert. You know, he's there after all those guys. So, you know, he had such a long career. And so that's why I think, you know, it was such a nice thing to see him get that brass ring and get the thing that he, you know, he had made no bones about it. This is what I really, really want. You know, I want this 500 win. And so for him to get it, you know, it was so special. And, you know, I don't know that, you know, it's neat. Sid's call is so neat because, you know, he's like, well, what a great spokesman he'll be. And he was, you know, I mean, Sam Hanks was a great spokesman. You know, he was on the broadcast almost every year after that in some capacity, just to come on as the director of racing and you know, talk to Sid and just give an update on how the things were going on the day. And, You know, he was so highly respected and just a good guy, just a guy who, you know, and he always had time for the fans. You know, I didn't get to meet him until much, much later in his life. But one of those guys who, you know, I'm always intrigued by the guys, you know, how did they react to, you know, fan mail and things like that? Because as a young autograph collector, I want to know, well, did they still care about the Speedway? Did they care about the fans? And Sam Hanks, I'll tell you right now, cared, absolutely cared. And he was a guy who always had time for an autograph, had time for a story, had time for people. And I think the guy you're going to bring up again in a minute here is another great example of a guy like that.
Let's bring up that guy 3 years later after Sam Hanks' storybook ending to his career. He retires in Victory Lane. Jim Rathman, a star of the 1950s, certainly had plenty of success, finishing second three times in the decade. But he wins the race, of course, in one of the great races of all time in 1960. Some people will say it, in fact, was the greatest race of all time, despite the fact that maybe you don't remember the finish of it so much, at least the last couple laps after Roger Ward had to slow down to nurse the car home. But Jim Rathman, a lot like Sam Hanks, waited a long time to get that first win. And when he got it, I think one of those guys, again, that everybody, even if you were a fellow competitor, had to be happy for.
Oh, yeah, and because he had been so close, you know? I mean, he had been close several times. And, you know, another guy who had been around at that point for several years, you know, kind of like another guy you brought up previously, Johnny Rutherford. When Johnny Rutherford finally got his first win, a lot of people excited and happy for Johnny Rutherford. But for Rathman in his situation, you know, Rathman had been around, again, a guy who had been around since the 40s. You know, I mean, he came in late 40s, but, you know, he had been around for a while and knocking on the door. You know, he had finished second at that point three times by the time he won in 1960. And, you know, had he not beaten Roger Ward and he finished second that day, I mean, think about that. Think about the fact that had that been reversed, think about if Jim Rathman had finished second four times, you know.
Including 2 years in a row to Roger Ward.
Yeah, I mean, so just interesting. There's actually a book in progress right now from a company called Racemaker Press that's called Second to One. About the guys who finished second in the 500 but never won. And it's an impressive list. I mean, these are some outstanding drivers who finished second in the 500 but never won the race. But, I mean, think about that. If, you know, if you're Jim Rathman and you finish second four times, you know what I mean? So but I think that's one of the reasons why it was such, you know, very heartening that that Rathman finally did get that win in 60. Because, you know, he had been there and knocking on the door and was obviously a contender and finally got that win. And Jim Rathman, another guy like Sam Hanks, I'll tell you right now, if you never got a chance to meet Jim Rathman, you missed out. Because I just love the guys who care about the Speedway as much as Jim Rathman and Lloyd Ruby and Jerry Grant, three guys who we've lost in recent years, cared. Okay, Jim Rathman came back every year that his health permitted. Okay, and you know, Jim Rathman was just such a good guy. He would come back every year. He would you know, be available. He'd sign all the autographs you ask him to sign. You know, and meet people and visit. You know, and he would just come back because it was like, you know, it was a big, you know, it's a big thing. You know, he wasn't one of those guys who, you know, hey, I won the 500 and then you never see or hear from him again and doesn't mean anything to him. And unfortunately, we have a couple guys like that now. And I think that's unfortunate. And I think, I mean, there's what some of these guys have to understand. And I don't want to get myself in trouble for saying this, but what some of these guys have to understand is it means a lot to a lot of people to see these guys. And, you know, I don't want to single out a couple guys, but they know who they are. Okay. And they just don't make any kind of effort to acknowledge the fact that they're 500 winners. They don't make any effort to acknowledge the fact that it's important. Jim Rathman was the exact opposite. Jim Rathman, it was a big deal. And it was a big deal for fans to get to say, hey, there's Jim Rathman. And a guy like Lloyd Ruby, who never even won the 500, okay? But it was a big deal that every year you could count on seeing Lloyd Ruby in Gasoline Alley. And it was, it's one of those things like, you know, the Swallows returning to Capistrano every year. It was Lloyd Ruby's back at Gasoline Alley. So everything's right in the world because, you know, these star guys are coming home, and so everything's okay, you know? And so I was always heartened by the fact that a guy like Jim Rathman, who, you know, let's not forget, okay, not only did he have an outstanding racing career, but this is a businessman who was running a successful Chevrolet dealership that provided all the cars, all the Corvettes to all the astronauts, you know, Gus Grissom and Frank Borman and John Glenn, and all these guys are driving Jim Rathman Chevrolet Corvettes down in Melbourne, Florida. Okay. He's got a successful business, you know, but he made time every year to come back. It was just always a neat thing to see these guys every year. And so to me, you know, it meant a lot to have Jim Rathman around. And so when he passed away, one of the things, that was a little bit sad for me personally was when Jim Rathman passed away a couple years ago, it was right on the heels of when we lost Dan. And I think that, you know, we were all still so much in shock and numb about losing Dan that we didn't take as much time to remember Jim Rathman as much as we might have otherwise.
There were two unfortunate things about that. As you mentioned, the fact that he passed away so close to when Dan Weldon lost his life. And so the next year, you really couldn't give Rathman the kind of due that he deserved at last year's 500. And the other part of it was it happened, I think, the night before Thanksgiving. And so naturally, the coverage wasn't what it otherwise might have been.
Yeah, it's just I just don't think we, you know, remember Jim Rathman as much as we probably should have in that case. And I, you know, I'm not saying that's anybody's fault. I'm just saying it was just the circumstance of how it happened with what you're saying. I mean, there were a couple different circumstances that happened with that, and it was just you know, we lost two 500 winners within a few weeks of each other, and you know, it was just a sad situation because, you know, Jim's health had been deteriorating for a while and he wasn't able to make the trip. He had stopped being able to make the trip, you know, wasn't able to come be a part of the celebration for the centennial celebration, especially for the, you know, it was really unfortunate that he wasn't able to be here for the great 2011 celebration. But, you know, I mean, he was just a cool guy. I mean, that's all I can tell people who didn't get to know him. I mean, I only met him probably met him eight times total. But I would write him probably two or three times a year. I'd write him a letter and send him a photograph that I found for him that he didn't have. And he'd always say, oh, that's a cool one. I don't have that one. And, you know, I mean, he was just a cool guy. I mean, he was just a neat guy. And, you know, he's sorely missed, I can tell you that.
Back to that 1960 race, 29 lead changes between, or total 29 lead changes, many of them happening in the final handful of laps between Rathman and Ward. Sid Collins and company with the call as they go down the stretch, the final couple of laps of the 1960 Indianapolis 500.
Back in the control tower once again, we may wind up just following this duel right around the racetrack for the final six laps of the event, because that's what we're here for, to follow this race. The race is developed into two cars only. Johnny Thompson is sputtering on around the track, kicking a lot of smoke out, and we'll see Roger Ward and Jim Rathman coming by soon. Traffic is starting here in front of us as six cars are bunched fairly close together, but the two leaders are running rather separate from the rest of the group, which makes it easier for them to kick a lot of speed, too. Of course, they catch up, then they're going to have some trouble. There's Ward ahead of Rathman by about 30 feet. Let's pick up Bill Frosch in the southwest turn.
And it's still Ward ahead, as Rathman tries to pick up close behind him. Nose to tailpipe, and away they go, John Peterson.
All right, we're waiting for them, Bill. So far, we're not able to pick them up, and here they come. Roger Ward into the number two corner, going down underneath the white line, and Jim Rathman right behind him, neck and neck. And to you, Bernie Herrmann.
Okay, John, we're waiting for the white car and the blue car now. And it's Rathman and Ward neck and neck, and finally Ward goes out in front by a car length. Okay, take it, Lou Palmer.
Ward's still holding it. Rathman closing close behind. They're approaching the turn now. Ward's in it. Low. Rathman immediately behind him, right on the exhaust pipe as they go over now to the north chute. And, Jim, you can see them approaching.
Yes, I can, Lou. Boy, they are so close together. This is going to be a fantastic finish of this race, one that I have never seen before. Boy, Ward came awful close to the wall then. Sid, how do they look in the home stretch?
Well, I hope that no one does get a little bit out of gear here and skid into the wall. It's Ward ahead by about 20 feet now of Rathman. Let's follow them right around with four laps to go. Here's the southwest turn, Bill.
And here comes Roger Ward still out in front. Rathman cannot catch him, and away they go down the chute. And come in, John.
And Roger Ward just now clears the stands down here to our front. It comes into the number two corner. Rathman right on his tail, right on his tail. Into the back straightaway. And now both of them kick it as they go into the straightaway. And again to you, Bernie.
Okay, John, you know they can pick up speed down here. They go fastest as anywhere on the track. It's Ward up in front of Rathman by about a car length and a half, with Rathman picking up speed and down to you, Lou Palmer.
And here they come again. Ward still holding the front end. It had been a race personally we were watching before. Now what can be going through the mind of Rathman as he follows Ward around so close to the lead but not in it? Jim, can you pick them up now?
Yes, I can, Lou, and they may run into a bunch of cars right ahead up there. Still, Ward, then Rathman. And they're fast approaching some other cars. Sid, pick it up.
Yes, Eddie Johnson, Paul Goldsmith, and number 17, Carter, right in front of them here. And as they come down, it's Rathman ahead of Ward by a fair margin. Looks like about 65 feet right now.
Very much so, Sid. Actually, right at the present time, Rathman is trying and trying real hard.
Well, you can't try any harder. Let's pick up John Peterson in the southeast turn.
There's better than $100,000.
Jim Rathman ahead of Roger Ward in the southeast turn. Sid, Roger Ward dropped back about 8 or 9 car lengths as they go on that back straightaway. To you, Sid.
Let's go back to the back stretch. Bernie?
Okay, Rathman is way out in front by about 8 or 9 car lengths still, and Ward trying to catch up. Sid?
Northeast turn, Lou Palmer.
Rathman's lead is growing. Rathman's lead continues to grow. It could be he was holding back through the race, or it could be Ward has trouble. Either way, Rathman's ahead, Sid.
How about Jim Shelton on the northwest?
Well, about the same report that Lou had. I don't know what happened to Ward. He seemed to have dropped back considerably now. As you will see in the home stretch, it could have been the other car. Sid, what does it look like?
Well, this is no time for strategy like that, that's for sure. There goes Rathman, and now Ward must be back about 140 or 50 feet. He's pointing back towards his tire, back to the back of the car, Freddie.
I think mainly fuel, actually. He's probably a little low on fuel, and he's probably running out of fuel coming off the corners. Rushes to the back of the tank and or the back end's bouncing and is not as secure as it should be.
Well, we're on the 198th lap, just two laps to go as they pass this time. The white flag is coming out this time, which will flash to the 199th. With one lap to go, it looks as though Jimmy Rathman may have surpassed our defending champion. It'll be too bad if it were something like fuel. It would cause Roger Ward to have to slow down and conserve, and then, of course, drop by using the fuel up from second to perhaps 10th or 15th by dropping out of the race.
Yeah, the weight of the fuel dissipating out of the gas tank can create a handling problem, and it's possible that's what is affecting the automobile now in cornering. Another thing, too, that we have to note, they're running into some traffic here that could be changed, too. This could change the whole aspect of the thing if Rathman got hung up at all in
traffic. Well, here comes Rathman to take the white flag. Jimmy Rathman, three times runner-up, and we don't even see Roger Ward yet.
Here
he comes, and he's slowing down considerably. He is doing nothing he can do, obviously, to catch up with Rathman. It looks as though Jim Rathman from Miami, Florida, if he can hold out for the rest of this lap. Let's pick him up, boys, in the back stretch. Bernie Herrmann, you should be seeing him about now.
We're waiting for the quiet, unassuming Jim Rathman, the Cantwell special. And here he comes now in car number 4. Bias goes Jim Rathman. Okay, Sid.
Pick up Lou Palmer in the northeast turn and follow it around, boys.
We've got him. The crowd knows. Rathman's coming by, and he's got no competition. Two more turns. He's made one of them. There's only one turn remaining, number 4, for Jim Rathman, who goes into the short chute now. Here comes Roger Ward at the moment. Over to Jim Shelton.
All right, Jim Rathman just kind of taking it easy here. Boy, I don't know what happened. Roger Ward is really biting fingernails if he could.
Here he comes now. Gee, he's dropping back considerably. Okay.
Here's the checkered flag for Jim Rathman, the winner of the 44th annual 500-mile race. Raises his left hand, and boys, let's follow him around as he waves to the crowd. Bill Frosch, has he passed you yet?
Not yet. Here he comes, and he looks happy. John, how about it?
Bill, we're just picking him up at number two. Here's a happy guy. He almost got crossways as he got down underneath the white line. Holy mackerel. Now he's all right and back out of the straightaway, Bernie.
I've been waiting for Jim Rathman, three times runner-up. He just got tired of winding up second. And you know, California and Florida both claim this guy. It's indeed a sunny day for the soft-spoken, hard-driving driver, Jim Rathman, who's now heading on down to the third turn. So it's all yours, Lou Palmer.
And here he comes into the number three corner, and gently after that experience in number two, the winner waves at the crowd, Jim Rathman, going now into the north chute, a happy man, and over to Jim Shelton in number four.
All right, Lou, this man is mighty happy, and he slowed down considerably. He's taking no chances. He usually is number two, but he certainly is number one today. He is in the home bricks right now, and I know Sid Collins would like to pick him up and give him a send-off to home.
Well, I was just looking here while you were talking at Freddie Agavation's private sheet he wrote down before the race, Jim Rathman to be the winner of this race. So, Freddie, I picked Ward last year. You picked Rathman this year. And here comes Rathman. You can hear the crowd, I'm sure, in the background screaming as he heads for victory lane. Luke Walton will be standing by to pick him up, and we'll throw it to Luke just as soon as he gets down. Roger Ward some 13 seconds behind Jim Rathman to come in second. And Charlie will keep track of all the other finishers in the race. Certainly through the first 10 for you. Turning into the lane, now here's Luke Walton.
Here we are in victory lane for the glorious phase of this most spectacular finish of the 500-mile automobile race. And the pit crew and the men are driving, gathering around Jim Rathman here. And Jim has a big ice-cold bottle of milk, and let's talk with him. Just a minute, Jim.
Leave it on.
His pit crew is really gathering around him, and Julie Pratt, the queen of the 500 festival, has put the garland of flowers around his neck, and just a minute he's going to have another drink of that ice cold milk. Jim, just a minute, here we are, Jim, right over here. Jim, how do you feel after that most spectacular finish?
Pretty good. What happened to Ward?
He ran out of gas.
You and Roger really put on a spectacular finish today.
Thank you.
Jim, what do you got to say to the
people
of the country? Here she is. There's Jim's wife, and she is doing the honors of congratulating him and saluting him. And here, Julie Pratt is doing the same thing. Here's a big floral offering, and they are pink carnations with a beautiful pink ribbon on them. And now Jim in his blue uniform. Everybody seems to like everybody in the racing fraternity is congratulating Jim Rathman, who has been a bridesmaid at the 500 a long time. And this victory was a long time in coming. Are you tired, Jim?
What?
Are you more tired than you were in the other races?
No, not too bad.
Could you go another race today?
Well, I think if we had to, yes.
What were you thinking about the last five laps, Jim?
I was thinking that Roger Ward had a little more steam than what I did, and I figured it was all lost. My right front tire was down to the cord, and I didn't know what to do. I just figured Roger had a little more horsepower than I did, and every time he wanted to, he could pass me. So I didn't know what to do.
And now here's Mrs. Rathman. What do you think about all this, Mrs. Rathman?
I think it's too good to believe.
Looks like I'd like to have a little grime around the lips here from that big kiss you gave Jimmy. You don't mind about that now, do you?
No, I don't mind dirt at all.
Well, congratulations, Jim, and you're a very popular winner this year. Did you see all those people getting up and cheering as you came in victory lane?
Yes, I did, and I want to thank every one of them. They really make me feel good. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim Rathman. And now here is Raymond Firestone congratulating Jim Rathman. What did you think of that spectacular finish, Raymond?
I think this is one of the finest races I've ever seen anywhere, and the driving that Jim did and the other boys was wonderful. And, of course, we can tell a little how they drive with this tire wear, which was wonderful, but it was just a great race all the way through.
Thank you very much, Raymond Firestone. And now the photographers are busy taking pictures of the winner of the 1960 500-mile race at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And believe me, Jim Rathman certainly is a very popular winner, certainly deserving the victory that he won from Roger Ward. And now let's talk with Julie Pratt, the queen of the 500 festival. Julie, how do you like all this anyway?
Oh, it's wonderful, Lou. Thank you. It's marvelous. I'm so glad for Mr. Athman.
You certainly have added a lot of glamour and beauty to the 500 Festival and to the 500 race, and the people of Indianapolis and the rest of us around here at the track are certainly proud of the way you have carried on as queen of the 500 Festival.
Thank you. It's been a thrill.
Thank you very much, Julie Pratt, the queen of the festival. Now we're going to back away from the car as Mrs. Rathman is getting in the car with Jim, so that the photographers, there's a whole battery of them right in front of the car, taking pictures of Mr. and Mrs. Jim Rathman. And believe me, they are a very popular couple, very handsome couple, I should say, too, right now, in front of all these cameras. This is one of the most spectacular finishes, one of the most interesting races of the entire series, and it is a great series here at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Now that we have talked with the winner, Jim Rathman, and his wife, and the queen of the 500 Festival, we're going to take you back to the tower and Sid Collins.
Luke, thank you very, very much. And Jim Rathman, of course, is a very quiet type of guy, and he didn't sound too excited, but I know that inside he was thrilled to pieces to win the 500-mile race after such a long, elusive period of time.
One final note on Jim Rathman, Mike. For those who don't know, and obviously many of you who are checking this out do know, but for those who may not know, Jim Rathman's birth name is?
Not Jim.
No. What is it?
It is Richard. Richard Rathman.
His brother.
Yes.
Who went by Dick Rathman. His name was originally
Jim Rathman.
What gives?
Well, they had to switch identities because of the fact that, and actually, I believe the story is even more quirky because I believe actually Jim's given first name is actually Royal.
I think that's right. Royal Richard.
Yeah, I believe he's Royal Richard Rathman.
And the guy who became known as Dick Rathman is James.
Yeah, so they had to switch identities because of the fact of the age requirements at the time and things like that. So they had to switch switch birthdays, to make a long story short, as Donald would say. They had to switch birth dates, and so they basically switched identities, and they had to do that, and then they never switched back, basically. So the driver that we know as fans, the driver that we know as Jim Rathman, is actually Dick Rathman. And the one that we know as Dick Rathman is actually Jim Rathman.
That is, that's the stuff of legends. And actually, a little tease for Sunday's show, similar story involving Troy Ruttman. Not that convoluted, but Troy Ruttman had to fudge on his age a little bit at the outset of his career. Mike, it's always been fun. Let's talk again next week.
That sounds fine.
You have earned the right to come back next week.
Oh, was this like is this like one of those like Survivor games or something?
Every week is trial by fire.
Oh, all right. Well, neat. I didn't know that there was some sort of a test, but hopefully I passed and I will be able to come back.
Yes, you will, unless I change my mind, could happen. You
know, all right. Well, that sounds good. Well, thank you for having me back. And in case this is I don't get to come back next week, it was still fun anyway.
The end. All right, again, the history of the 500 this Sunday as we take a look at four of the drivers who made a big name for themselves at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in the 1950s. On your radio at 93.1 on the FM dial, on your smartphone, tune in, or iHeartRadio, and right here online at WIVC.com.